Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Oh, hello. I did not see you there. Come in, pull up a seat, and join us for some Waiting for Doom.
Hello, I'm Paul. You may find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. You may send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You may look at a website called mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is about the Doom Patrol and about our site a little bit. And we are also... We are also on Facebook, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yes, hello. I am the one called Mike. You may find me on the Twitters at AvantGarve. You may also find on the Twitters the sentient show account for this show. For this show called Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And you may also find more awesome comicness and stuff on a site called Comicosity.com.
It is a site about comics, and it is very good. One of the things that I enjoyed very much on the site was a review of Deathstroke number one.
Oh my, how was that, Paul?
It was very fascinating. It was written by Doug Zavisha, who is a friend of ours on the show.
He also does that site called My Greatest Adventure 80 Blocks.
All right, change gears, Mike. Change.
Sorry, folks. We're recording out of our normal schedule here. I think we've gone a little bit mad.
We have, yeah. Doug did this review of Deathstroke, and it's got me sold on the series because I, as I may have mentioned on the show before, I'm a trade waiter. I wait for trades, and this sounds so good that I'm tempted just to order it straight away, the trade, because you can order it on. They're already online.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, Doom Patrol the Silver Age Volume 1 is online to order as well. So you can get like the first 16 issues of the Doom Patrol from the 60s in one handy volume, in colour.
Oh, in colour. Oh, that answers my next question.
It's in colour.
Very tempting. Very tempting.
Very tempting. Anyway, so that's what I... Well, that's what caught my eye in comics.
On the comicosity.com.
Thank you, Mike.
You are welcome, Paul. How has the rest of your week in comics and such been?
Good. I went on a road trip with Rifty up to Sydney, and we went to a comic shop, which Liverpool.
Okay.
Which I'm always disturbed by Liverpool. Is it named after a pool of liver? You know, I always think that.
Possibly. But wouldn't it be named after the pool of liver in England?
Possibly.
Yeah. So it's a British you've got to worry about, really.
Yeah. It's just a disturbing concept when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's like Guts Bucket. I just went up Guts Bucket for the day. Anyway.
Guts Bucket. Cool, blimey. I've spent the whole day on the road at Guts Bucket.
Hello, Martin Gray. I didn't realise he was on the show. Oh, this is the worst show ever.
It's the best one ever. Shut your mouth. So did you get any good finds at the comic shop in Guts Bucket?
It's pretty overpriced. So all the back issues were half price, which sort of brought them down to a reasonable price.
Right.
For regular. But I picked up an issue of The Flash, which is issue 19 from volume 2 of The Flash, which is... where Wally West gets invited to a party by the Rogues and as a joke, and he shows up and it's like a party for Captain Cold, and they're all just being rogues. It's all very entertaining. Right. Quite good little issue.
So what year was that from?
Oh, it would probably be about 88. It's the Flash that spun out of Legends with Wally West as the Flash. So post crisis, Barry's dead. Wally has graduated from Kid Flash to being the Flash.
Okay.
And it's sort of in that period where he's a bit of a douche before Mark Waid took over and heroed him up a bit.
Okay.
So, yeah. But it's interesting. It's well written.
Good. Cool.
And I think it's William Mesner Loeb's, I'm guessing, as the writer.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Could be wrong with that pronunciation, at least.
I could be wrong with the pronunciation. What about you, Mike? Did you comics?
Do you comics? Do I do the comics? Yes, I actually did do the comics this weekend. I read about a whole dozen, I think it was. I think I'm down to a mere 20 in my to-read pile. And then I got an email from my comic shop saying, your next 30 comics are coming in this week. I was like, oh, great. Because my store gets monthly deliveries, so cool. I'll have just finished one pile before I can go and get the next one. I caught up on Future Quest. That's lots of fun. Mighty Zodiac, which we had, you know, previous guest of the show, Jay Torres, was on and telling us about. I'm really enjoying that. The Paybacks were back with a brand new issue, number one, out now from Heavy Metal Printing or Publishing, whatever they're called. And that's the one where it's superheroes that are kind of in the repossession business, where they're getting stuff back from other failed superheroes that haven't met their payments for all their gear.
Repossession of powers and equipment.
That sort of thing. So
nice.
So that had five issues at Dark Horse, but then for whatever reason, they wrapped that storyline up very briefly, and now it's back with a brand new number one. So hopefully this will have a long and healthy life there. Caught up with Miss Marvel with her tie-ins to Civil War II, which I'm avoiding that event entirely, but Miss Marvel's always good value. I guess the biggest bummer for me was I finally read the Rebirth issues of Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns. And then the following number one issues for each of those. And
it's not the strongest comics, is it, the Green Lantern?
It's not, and I'm kind of... I've had these on my pile for a while now. Because I don't know what it was, possibly to do with the group editor who's had his name in the news for the wrong reasons in times recent. But I thought, you know what, I'll finally get to them because I am a fan of Green Lantern and the whole mythos. And, you know, I got into Green Lantern with the last Rebirth series that Geoff Johns wrote all those years ago. And I've got everything Green Lantern, you know, up until this point. And I'm kind of like... You know, I think my time with Green Lantern is going to start and end with a Rebirth.
Mm.
It just felt like it's retreading such similar stuff.
Yeah.
That I don't know if I can be bothered to revisit it again.
So what Rebirths are you getting and enjoying?
Detective Comics. I'm loving that. I've got Wonder Woman sitting in the pile, but I haven't gotten to it yet. So I've got about...
They're pretty good.
I've heard nothing but good about that. So I've got the Rebirth issue and I think the first three issues of the series, with I think the fourth coming in this week. I'm not sure, but that...
I think there's about 27 out now.
Right. yes, of course. And Justice League. And I was going to get... I'm sure there was meant to be a new series called Trinity coming out. But I don't know whether that's been cancelled or pushed back or what. But that was going to have Supes, Wundy, and Batman in it.
I think it's still coming. I think it's one of the last.
Yeah, I'm sure it was due out early August. But for whatever reason, it hasn't materialised yet. But anyway, we'll get it. So I'm not getting a lot of Rebirth stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of trimmed back a lot from DC and from Marvel, to be honest. So... yeah, it's interesting times in the comic collection. Yeah, it's I guess, you know, they can't all be winners, but I'm seriously on the fence with continuing my love affair with Green Lantern. Yeah, bit of a bummer. Yes. Anyway, let's cheer ourselves up by going down on Derrington Way.
Okay, if we look at what Gerard Way and Nick Derrington have been up to lately, we can see that Bleeding Cool, the comic gossip site and rumours and other things, they did a review of the first issue.
Mm.
And it's a pretty good review. They're pretty favourable. Yeah. So I don't want to spoil too much, but I will say that we do get the name of the character with the domino mask and the sort of spotty outfit.
Looks like we both lose the bet.
We both lose. Her name is Terry Nunn.
Mm-hmm.
N-O-N-E, not N-U-N. And we've currently been working through the Morrison stuff with the Brotherhood of Dada version 2.0. And in that, there is a character called Number Nunn, who is a character you never see. He's sort of disembodied, but he causes things to disappear in accidents and bumps into people and all that sort of stuff. And perhaps Terry Nunn is some relation to Number Nunn. What do you think, Mike?
Possibly, yes. It's quite possible. She has a bit of the outlandish element about her that members of the Brotherhood of Dada do have.
Yeah.
So it's quite possible. I'm just glad that neither of us own the other one a pony anymore. And I like that she's a singing telegram as well.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Hmm.
But we see Casey Brink is featured a fair bit in the art that's shown, and she is just adorable.
Yeah.
Isn't she? She's going to be a favourite character of lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Very and, cool stuff.
Niles Calder is in the book. We get to see him. He is sitting in a forest playing the synth.
Yep.
And the note he plays looks like a fly.
Mm, so clearly he's been sampling the sounds of nature, and you know he's going to drop a fat beat behind the sound of a buzzing fly.
Yeah. And we see that Robot Man is beaten up, smashed up. Take a drink, everybody. So he is in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like Casey has brought him home from work in a cardboard box, which sort of reminds me of C-3PO in Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're going to put him together and crack open. And we see there's some evil people who look like they're made out of black glowing crystal.
Mm.
Yeah. Presume they're evil.
Let's call them evil. They look evil. They look scary enough to be evil. Yeah.
Yeah. And they, should we spoil what they're planning to do?
Well, let's mention the character's name. They mention the name Danny, but not Danny in the way that we're used to. So let's not spoil that for those that haven't seen this yet.
Yeah.
Because I'm very interested to see how we get from Danny the Street to Danny the... what they call him in this.
Yeah. They have nefarious plans for Danny, it looks like.
It's not the first time someone has come after Danny. God, poor Danny.
Yeah. Yeah, but they seem to be a little bit of a corporate commentary because they want to exploit Danny.
Mm, yes.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, it looks very interesting and we can't wait to actually get the issue and have it for ourselves. But, yeah, I'm loving what we see here. I'm loving the art.
Yes.
Nick Darrington is going to be a massive star after this book hits. Yeah. Everyone, you know, Marvel's going to try and poach him straight away.
Well, yeah. Let's hope not.
Yeah, well,
let him try. We'll fight.
He doesn't want to go to Marvel. He wants to do the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, that's cool. Right. Why would you go to Marvel? What have they ever done?
So, based on what I'm seeing, I'm expecting a really good long run of Doom Patrol.
Yes. Yes, please. It
would be awesome.
I think just these panels we're seeing alone, they look fantastic. I love Terry's design. I love Casey's look. I love the fact that Cliff turns up in the first issue, you know, in pieces, in a box.
Yeah.
And we got Niles doing some weird stuff in the forest with his keyboard. You know, it just looks like such a great first issue. I can't wait till we get it.
God. Yes. Bloody Rich Johnson's already got it. I want it.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, well. Awesome. Okay. So that's the latest installment of Paul and Mike Read the Internet.
Hey, I can hear some ticking. Thank God. What do you think the ticking might be for?
Oh, you want me to identify that ticking?
Yes, please.
Is it a watch?
Close.
Is it a pacemaker?
I wish I had one.
Is it a clock?
It's the Doom clock. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so looking at the face of the Mighty Doom clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from Keith Giffen and Matthew Clark. That was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been 5 years and 17 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. But issue 1 of volume 6 comes out September 14th. That's only 2 weeks away. Very exciting times.
Unbelievable.
Who would have thought?
I don't believe it.
It cannot be believed.
I'm fully expecting to die in 12 days and never ever see it.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you get to read it and then, you know. Yeah, it's getting a bit dark and morbid now. The last appearance of the team was a year and 3 weeks ago. We saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for the princely sum of US $1.50 on September 3rd, 1991, and cover dated October 1991, was Doom Patrol Volume 2, issue number 48, from Grant Morrison and Richard Case. And this was one of Paul's favourite stories. The issue was titled Entertaining Mr. Evans. And saw the patrol dealing with the sexual havoc caused by the saucy shenanigans of shadowy Mr. Evans. And we discussed this issue only a couple of months back, just in episode 60. So you can check that one out for more. But yeah, it got a little bit raunchy, a little bit randy.
A bit naughty.
Jane revealed a new character that was a bit... Yeah, well. Whew. Got a bit hot and steamy. Yeah.
So, take a shower.
Take a drink and a shower. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Autumn, Argus, Autumn, Ballistic, Argus, Cardinal Sin, Channel Man, Chimera, Edge, Freight Train, Geist, Gunfire, Acrat, Harry Force, Hitman, Hook, Jail, Joe Public, Loria, Crack, Layla, Lilac, Loose Cannon, Megabiter, Mongolier, Myriad, Nightblade, Output, Pass, Prism, Razor Shark, Rodney Jane, Rod Samaritan, Shadow Strike, Slick Shot, Smart Shot, Terror Smith.
Wow, that's a lot of radical trademark names. And you may not have heard of any of them, but they were all introduced in DC Comics' 1993 summer annuals. Most went on to figure into more stories within their four-color universe. Many earned their own spotlight series, and one became a cult hit from acclaimed creators. While the comics of the 1990s are often derided, for me, as a longtime comic book reader, I found a deepened fandom and a safe harbor from the chronium age in the DCU. I fell in love with the history and legacy found in generations of heroic mantles, and my journey into this continuity largely began with Bloodlines. Join me, Diablo Frank, as I explore the more overlooked areas of DC Comics' superheroes, beginning with an early 90s intellectual property-generating stunt and fanning outward towards other obscurities and icons, from throughout decades of sequential art stories, all flowing through the DC bloodlines.
Podcasts available on iTunes, Shout Engine, and the Internet Archive.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're going back to the 60s, 1967, in fact, to look at two fantastic issues of the Doom Patrol, issue 115 and 116. And Mike, my good friend, is going to take us through issue 115. Go for it, Mike.
It's so awesome. It's got some of my favorite villains in it. So, yes, Doom Patrol 115 from DC Comics, cover dated November 1967, actually going on sale September 5th, 1967, for a mere 12 cents.
That's almost the date that this, you know, it's within a few days of this episode.
It is. This was almost going to be the one that I mentioned in this week in Doom Patrol history, but it was a couple of days outside the... So close. So we'll do it next week. Cool. Anyway, this was edited by Murray Boltonoff, written by Arnold Drake, with art by Bruno Premiani, and the brilliant cover art by Bob Brown.
Not the Green Senator.
And it shows one of the mutant masters with his giant cyclopean eye blasting down on the team and causing chaos and wreaking havoc on everything.
It's a very, 50s movie poster cover.
Yes. And I think that's what I love about it. They're just such bizarre mutant freaks and they just cause so much damage and the heroes have got to save the day. Love it. Anyway, the story opens with three terrifying mutants staring at a giant globe of the Earth and proclaiming they will crush the inhabitants of the planet. They will show no mercy and crush them all. And we see more of these mutants as they begin their attack. These large, shirtless brutes. For some reason, they have pants but no shirts. I don't know why. And they've each got three fingers on each hand. One of these mutants is a cyclops with an eye in the place of where his head should be. We see his name is The second has a featureless face, but a giant eye in each hand, and he is R. Well, no, I think it's R. IR.
Ear.
Ear.
Ear. Ear.
Yeah, they're not the greatest names, but anyway. So we've got ear, and the third has no head, but his face is within the chest of his body, and his name is R. So yeah, very, very odd. So they're on the case, they're running away to begin their attack, and you're left wondering, what could have caused these monstrosities to be, Paul? We'll have to read on to find out. But before we can, we return to the secret lab of Dr. Niles Calder, the chief of the Doom Patrol. And at this moment, he's involved in an astounding experiment. He's activated his gigantic psycho ray, firing a beam of energy into a monitor, which in turn is radioed into the brain of Madame Rouge, who's all the way over in Paris, France. And yeah, that's high tech for those times.
How does that work? How do you fire a beam into a monitor?
Well, I think the monitor is linked up to the painting in her bedroom in Paris, which has got secret technology hidden inside of it.
How does that work? I don't get it. It makes no sense.
Paul, comic book science.
And the size of this thing that he's firing into there, it's like this giant tank gun. It's
ridiculous. But yes, and a few issues back, Robot Man went and was under the guise of creating a treaty with the Brotherhood, and he snuck into Madame Rouge's bedroom to hide some technology behind the painting in her bedroom, and that's what these energy is going through into her brain, thanks to this gigantic psycho ray. I hope the listeners haven't tuned out yet. But anyway, Madame Rouge, she's a former member of the Brotherhood of Evil, now potential paramour of the Chief, and the unknowing lab rat in his experiment. Because, you see, gang, thanks to crappy comic book science, the Chief believes he can cure her of being evil, because she suffers from schizophrenia, so he's going to blast nothing but good thoughts into her brain and cure her that way.
Mm.
Right.
I don't know why they don't do this in, psychological institutions.
Yeah, because it's baloney. However, the brain and Monsieur Mallard, who are still evil members of the Brotherhood, they want to keep their comrade evil, so they are also blasting beams into her brain with evil thoughts.
Oh!
Yes. So, understandably, she's, under a bit of stress through all this, and she wakes up crying, "Stop it! I can't stand it! Something pulling at me, tearing me apart. The pain is unbearable." Just like that French dialogue and accent.
I didn't know you spoke French, Mark.
Oui, oui. That means yes.
Oh, good.
Sorry, that means you needed a break. No, I went before we recorded.
Excellent.
Just as Chief finishes firing beams of complete, baloney into the monitor, into the painting in Paris, into Madame Rouge's brain, he then calculates how long it's going to be before Madame Rouge is good for good. When Larry Traynor, the Negative Man, interrupts, and he wheels Chief into the patrol's media center, where they have a gigantic TV on the wall, and they see the three mutants are shown attacking the city. And at this point, Larry and Cliff start making fun of the mutants. When Rita Farr appears at the team HQ, and she starts having a go at them, saying, you do recall that we're considered freaks and outcasts too, and people aren't too happy about us. And Cliff is thoroughly chastised, and he says, lesson learned. So the three heroes race into the city to face the mutants, but the patrol can do little to stop the rampage as cars and buildings are being blasted and vaporized by the mutant's strange powers. And Cliff turns to Rita and asks, do you still want to make friends with these guys? just as the Cyclopean mutant warns them, this was but a small exhibit of our power. We will strike only once more, and from that blow none shall escape.
They're very well spoken.
They are, considering only one of them has an actual mouth.
Yeah.
comic book science at its finest. Back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, the patrol are preparing themselves to track down the mutants, and the Chief begins to enter data and interrogate his electronic brain, the largest computer system yet developed, containing all human knowledge and up to date within 24 hours. Golly gee. And this computer informs them that the mutants were born near the first atomic experiments in 1945. And they're angry at the world, and the whole world must pay. Of course. And suddenly the Chief's fantastic technology has discovered that the mutants are atop the Alps, and they're firing a combined blast of their powers into space, and in doing so, they're actually pulling Halley's Comet down towards the Earth, and that's how they're going to get their revenge.
Right.
Crashing Halley's Comet into the Earth. Right. Good. Suddenly, Negman bursts forth from Larry's body, and he grabs Cliff, Robot Man, and Rita, Elastigirl, and they're all off flying to the Alps. And Chief yells after them, "I'll have another ally for you in 3 hours," not revealing to them that it's Rouge who will join the team at this time, once all the evil has been purged from her brain. And at this point, we cut away to see Madame Rouge having a bit of a meltdown. She's arguing with herself in the mirror, to the point where she throws her phone at the mirror, causing it to smash, and then she's literally physically tearing herself into two. So there is suddenly a good Madame Rouge and an evil Madame Rouge standing in the same room, and the fight is on. Biff, biff. Meanwhile, the patrol have arrived at the Alps, just as the effects of Halley's Comet drawing close to the Earth are felt, with gravity going mad around the world and seas are going wild. And Cliff punches the Cyclopean back, but the mutant retaliates with a blast from his giant eye, sending Cliff hurtling over the edge, but thankfully Rita embiggens her arm and just manages to catch him. And we suddenly cut back to the fight between Madame Rouge and Madame Rouge, and it grows deadlier. One of them grabs a knife, and the fight continues with lots of bad French accents and elongated limbs until suddenly one of them cries out, "Ear!" And the other Rouge marks, "Sacre bleu, she fell on the knife and died. And look, she disappears. I am free." And as the other Madame Rouge melts into the floor, Chief radios in for all his hidden technology, "Madame Rouge, answer me. I need your help." So I have a question about this scene, but we'll get back to that in a minute. Because the final scene of the story shows the three mutants have gained the upper hand. And they've actually knocked Rita out, taking her hostage. And they've shocked Cliff's human brain senseless and then buried him under 90 feet of snow. And as the mutants run off, they vow to complete their comet creation of the Earth. What do you think of that one, Paul?
Comet cremation.
What did I say?
Creation.
I was testing you and you've passed with flying colours. Well done.
I'm going to say I love the design of the Mutant Masters. They look so freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Like their names are crap. There's no effort put into their names.
None whatsoever.
But their designs, like the one who's just an eye. He has no mouth, no ears, no nothing except his eye and for a head.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's got arms and pants, which is handy.
Yeah.
How does he eat?
He's got another mouth hidden somewhere.
How does he talk? I don't know.
Maybe he's got a tiny mouth hidden under that eyeball, sort of in the neck folds. I don't know.
Oh, that's just weird.
Oh, well, we wouldn't want weirdness to come into it, would we?
Yeah, and then you've got eye hands. Mm. So eye face, eye hands, and face chest. You could call them all that.
Right.
Their new names. But interesting, guy with the face in the middle of his chest and no head. Yes. There was a character popped up in the Teen Titans a few years ago who looked like him. Did you ever come across that character?
I have not read enough of the Teen Titans to recall that happening, no.
Ah, he was called the Face.
Ooh.
And he could do blasts out of his eyes, but he was just a really inappropriate. He was like the Guy Gardner on the team. Like, he was just rude to everybody all the time.
Wow, okay. And
would be, inappropriately harassing Miss Martian and people like that.
Right.
So, yes, I'll get Wilfred to retweet the picture of...
Okay, yeah. Because, maybe it was him. And I recall when Nick Darrington did do a recent piece of artwork with a Cyclopean monstrous-looking guy, I thought that was one of these mutant masters. But that one had a mouth and the giant Cyclops eyes. So whether he's updated the design of it or whether it's someone completely new, I don't know.
Or whether it was unrelated to Doom Patrol. I thought it looked a little bit like the Ray Harryhausen monster from the stop-motion films back in the day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I really enjoy that. I love the look of the mutants. They're a lot of fun. As you said, very old school 50s, sci-fi, horror books sort of thing. Just really creepy looking. A lot of fun. They have a very basic premise that they've been treated badly by the world, so the whole world's going to pay, you know, and we're going to bring down Halley's Comet. It wasn't that convenient that was flying past at the time.
Well, it shouldn't have been. It only appears like every 76 years.
Yeah. I wonder if it did appear in 1967.
No.
It didn't?
It didn't. It came through
in... You don't remember it appearing that year?
No, I don't. It came through in 1910, and it came back in 1986, because I remember when I saw it in 1986, there was a lady there who was seeing it for the second time. She was not a young lady.
So she was really old.
That's a tactless way of putting it. But yes, she was a really old lady.
Right. Okay. Cool.
But she was like, seen it. No, she wasn't.
She was like, man, all these reboots, honestly.
Again with the comet.
Can't they come up with anything original? Man.
Yeah,
this one was a lot of fun. It's very... The whole thing with Madame Rouge being torn between good and evil, you know, and it finally coming to physical blows with herself. That was... And there's a shot where her face is sort of stretching apart as the two beings, you know, separate from each other and before the fight starts. That kind of creepy looking stuff there too.
Mm.
Yes. There was also... the final installment in this issue of Beast Boy's origin. Hooray! Which finally wraps up Gar Logan's origin before he met the team. And in this, we see that he's now living on the streets of Johannesburg as a penniless orphan. And it turned out that he actually stumbled across a Nazi scheme to create an army of trained attack guerrillas. Right. Like, there's a shot with the what looks like paratroopers, you know, coming into to land with their parachutes, but it's actually armed guerrillas.
I think I saw a documentary about this on the History Channel once.
Right. Okay. Of paratroopers or paratrooping guerrillas?
Oh, yeah, the Nazis were big on using guerrillas. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Of course, it wasn't long before Gar decides to intervene. He turns himself into a guerrilla and he leads an uprising against the Nazis. And while all this is going on, of course, Nicholas Galtree is also, you know, searching through Johannesburg, following up on rumors of green-skinned animals and this green-skinned boy. And just by sheer luck, he happens to stumble across the guerrilla uprising in the Nazi base. And he happily takes Gar back to America. The end.
Yeah, it's a dumb story, but I love the art because there's like when the gorillas are all parachuting in and there's gorillas in jeeps and they're waving the Nazi flag. And
yep.
It's just so... they're very well-drawn gorillas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course they would be. But yeah, the story is just very... It just seems like a really... bizarre way to wrap it up.
Yeah. But that, I mean, Bruno loved to draw a gorilla, didn't he?
Apparently so.
That was his thing. I mean, Monsieur Mala.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, I wonder if Arnold said to him, what do you want to draw? And he's like, gorillas? Put more gorillas in?
He's going, can I make them Nazi gorillas?
Nazi gorilla slaves? He's going, yeah, sure.
Sure. Bring it on.
I'll draw that.
Bring it on, Bruno. Yeah.
Draw the crap out of that. And he does.
He does, yes. Personally, I'm just glad that the Beast Boy story wrapped up finally. I will still, till my dying breath, always say that Rita should have had the backup story over Gar.
Yeah.
Gar wasn't even a member of the team. You know, yeah. He was there for the kids, for the young folk.
No, he didn't need it.
Didn't need it, you know.
Didn't bloody need it.
Didn't need it. Young people come along taking our old people's jobs. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Paul, before I keep crapping on any much further, tell us about issue 116.
116, it came out, according to Mike's Amazing Little Comics, on October 19th, 1967. But it was cover dated December 1967. It cost 12 cents. And it was one, there's no backup in this, so it's a whole story about something. And it's What's it about? We'll tell you. Anyway, written by Arnold Drake, drawn by Bruno Premiani. No gorillas in this one, as I mentioned. It has a cover which shows a giant purple and gold-looking gladiator dude slamming the crap out of Cliff into a wall with a shield.
Yep.
While Larry and Rita are sort of, their clothing is caught on a spear or something.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're all in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. And it says, who portrays the DP, and that stands for Doom Patrol, everybody, to the Galactic Gladiator?
Ooh.
Ooh. And this was drawn by Bob Brown, not the Green Senator.
Yeah, Bob Brown, the comic book artist, not Bob Brown, the Green Senator.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And anyway, let's get into the issue. So the story opens with a quick recap of Madame Rouge's literal struggle between her good and dark side and splitting and fighting before the evil Madame Rouge falls on the knife and melts for no discernible reason. Anyway, at the same time, Niles Calder, the chief, via his pervo monitor hidden behind the portrait, is asking for Madame Rouge's help to rescue robot man Cliff Steele. So Niles sends Larry Trainer's negative man energy to Paris to collect Madame Rouge and zips her to the Alps. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she stretches her arms deep into the snow and she grabs Cliff, who assumes it's Rita coming to save him. But he's surprised to see it's Madame Rouge instead. And Cliff is about to sock her, but she explains her new non-evil deal. And they realize that the mutant masters have now relocated to another mountain peak. This becomes a thing quite in this issue. The mutant masters sort of just keep moving.
Yep.
Anyway, so Negman zips in to ferry them off in search of another high-altitude locale. Meanwhile, the mutant trio draw the comet closer, and tidal waves are destroying cities, and flaming comet fallout is raining destruction everywhere. It's getting really bad. Mm. And the mutant trio have kept Rita unconscious as a handy hostage, but Cliff, Rouge, and Negative Man arrive, and it looks like a fight is going the patrol's way when Madame Rouge and Roboman get blasted by eye hands, and Torso Face almost buries them under a broken bit of cliff. A land formation, not the robot
not
man.
Not Cliff Robot Man.
No, it's actually a cliff.
Right. But
yeah. Anyway, Cliff shields Rouge from the cliff and the other, not himself. Anyway.
From the part of the mountainside, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Right. With Cliff? Okay. Good. Yep. Anyway, and as they're, snuggled together under the falling rocks, they share a moment of recognizing each other's hotness. Cliff says, I'm beginning to dig what the chief sees in you. And she says, I find myself forgetting that you are a robot man.
You speak really good French too, Paul.
I do. What the hell? Anyway, the mutant trio have flown off again. Oh. And the team all return to DP headquarters, where Chief has brought in reinforcements in the arrogant and annoying shape of Steve Dayton, Mento, and Gar Logan, Beast Boy. And Rouge and Niles are seeing, how they are going, and Cliff starts mocking them and pretending to kiss as they're reunited without any evilness now.
Yep.
So he's mocking out kissing on his metal hand. Anyway, yes, and Niles, reminded of the potential for the end of the world calamity, directs the team to watch the giant monitor as the government launches a number of atom bomb missiles at the comet. Unfortunately, the comet swerves wildly around these missiles whenever they're about to hit because, and the chief tells us, the comet has no precise path since it's been yanked from its natural orbit, which sounds like comic book science to me.
It sure does, yeah.
It's got an erratic path because it's yanked. I actually thought this was because the mutant masters were making it avoid the missiles, which would be a lot more.
That would actually be believable comic book science.
Yeah. Anyway. But the monitor is showing the utter devastation. It's tragic, a huge loss of life. The gravitational effects are leaving cities in ruins and thousands are surely dead.
Looks like something out of a Zack Snyder film.
It does. But Beast Boy, he breaks the at the moment by saying, okay, enough with the home movies. What are we going to do besides biting our nails, Grandpa?
God.
Really capturing the tragedy there, Beast Boy. Good one.
Yeah.
So Chief decides that they must split up and visit every major mountain chain. So Negman, acting as team transport again, he drops the first sub-team of Rita and Cliff in the Andes, but they are swarmed by hundreds of... llamas. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that was a bit unexpected.
But it's okay. They're only regular llamas.
Oh, thank God.
Anyway, Rita's arsehole husband Mento and his adopted son Beast Boy are dropped off in the Himalayas. And where Gar complains about being so cold and Mento's just following a hunch, Mento sensitively threatens to give him a split lift. What a great adopted dad. But they do spot some giant footprints in the snow leading into a cave. Have they found the mutant trio? No, it's just an axe-wielding abominable snowman. So Mento tries to blast the abominable snowman, but he dodges. And Gar changes into the form of a green yak with a human head and Donald Trump hair.
Oh, God, no. I was hoping no one would mention that.
And he grapples with the abominable snowman using his horns. And then, this is my favorite panel in the entire comic, the snowman one-handedly grabs Mento by the crotch.
Yep.
And holds him above with a cry of, "Aah!" And seeing his adopted dad held aloft by the crotch, Gar, clearly not thinking, screams, "Wait!" And the abominable snowman suddenly seems ready to listen to English for some reason.
Yep.
And he listens, and Gar calms it down and proposes that they become friends. And he gives the abominable snowman an Alfred E. Newman badge from Mad Magazine.
Mm, yeah.
For real.
Yeah. Nice bit of cross promotion there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably a good little collectible to have, I imagine. Snowman was probably quite pleased.
Mm, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get Wilfred to tweet that picture out too, because yeah, it's for real. It's Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah.
As a method of peace, I guess.
Anyway, the other team of Rita and Cliff have luckily found the mutant masters by doing their comet pulling thing on a nearby llama-less peak. And Rita tries to reason with them that they too are freaks and the world has accepted them due to the help of a great man. And Cliff tells them he didn't even have a body, so they could imagine what the chief could do to help them. They could become Tony Curtis, Paul McCartney, or Elvis.
Wow.
And Iface says, "Impossible. No plastic surgeon in the world could overcome the monstrous forms the Earth's atomic experiments blessed us with." And I think he's kind of got a point, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's about to kill them when a bloody flying saucer lands. What the hell? And out comes a guy, and he calls himself Selen, and he's a giant space gladiator with a message for the Earth's mutants. And he wants to invite the trio to his world after the Earth is destroyed, which is a good thing because they hadn't really thought about what they would do after the Earth was destroyed. Rita attacks Selen, but she's stunned by his sword because that's how swords work. And then Cliff lobs a giant boulder at Selen, who laughs and then electrocutes Cliff with his shield because that's how shields work.
Right.
And then Selen continues his sell for the mutants, saying they could be masters of his world, and regular body configuration dudes like himself are just the slaves. And this sounds unappealing for some bizarre reason to Iface, who then flies off to destroy the comet. And the other two decide to join him. And the three, they try to smash into the comet, but it swerves because of comic book science and erratic path. You know, yes. Things falling to Earth have erratic paths, everybody.
Yeah,
but they get behind it and then they smash into it and they blow it to smithereens, giving their lives to save the people of Earth because of some weird reverse psychology. I don't know. Because of Selen's offer?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Who could have foreseen this ridiculous illogical outcome? But then Selen's giant chest opens and reveals the chief. It's a robot body that he's in, and he's driving it from inside.
Oh my God.
And he must have had a spare flying saucer sitting around too.
Of course he did. Who knows what he's got hidden away in that headquarters of theirs. Yeah.
Some real last-minute MacGyvering there, chief.
Yeah.
You know, but Rita worked it out because Selen is Niles backwards.
Ah. She's more than just a pretty face.
Yeah, that's not the first time we've seen backwards name shtick in this comic.
I'm sure we've seen it in an earlier.
Yeah, Hallam. Hallam, who was actually Malar in that.
Yeah, that's still. Yep, that was the one that stopped me before. Yep.
Oh, yeah, but Mike, you better look out for entities called Luap in case.
Luap. Not Luap. Oh no.
Anyway. The issue ends with an intimate candlelit dinner between Madame Rouge and Niles Calder, alone at last, except for the entire team and Beast Boy and Mento all peering on in amazement.
The perving continues.
Don't they know it's wrong to invade people's privacy?
No.
And that's the end of the issue. How about this one, Mike?
It was good, but yeah, the sudden change of heart of the mutant masters, suddenly realizing that Selen's world, at first might offer them something, but then they learned that freedom is inevitable, and Earthmen have taught us a lesson. It's it seemed a bit confused and conflicted.
Yeah, it's a bit all over the place. But, I mean, to my mind, the entire issue is redeemed by Mento getting held up by his crotch above the abominable snowman.
Yep. Yeah, that was a pretty sweet shot. Yeah.
Go for the awesome junk grab and lift.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was great. Yep.
So, yeah, but basically they all die. It's weird.
Yeah, they kind of sacrifice themselves, but the logic behind it is not entirely there for me.
Yeah, and the DC Universe no longer has Halley's Comet. It's never coming back.
Well, it shouldn't have been there in the first place in this timeline, but, lots of comic book science in this story.
Yeah.
In both issues.
Sorry to all those people in the DC Universe in 1986. You're not going to see it.
No.
Or 2061.
Yep. It's
not coming back.
No, it's gone. It's gone. Good thing DC doesn't reboot their entire universe every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should do Halley's Comet Rebirth.
Yes. Do an entire issue dedicated to Halley's Comet just floating around in space and avoiding stuff as it gets close to stuff that might possibly harm it. Just because.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think this was a fine wrap-up. It was okay. The Mutant Masters logic still irks me a little bit, but the trick played by Niles was kind of cool, that he was, the Galactic Guardian, and he just happens to have a UFO and a giant robot body secreted away somewhere in the headquarters. Of course.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Plus an electric shield and, some sort of stunning sword.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course,
But, I mean, the art in these two issues is great.
Oh, yeah. It's great stuff. Great stuff from Premiere.
Yeah.
Especially Mento getting punched in the junk.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Right. Doomsplane done.
Yep, we've doomsplane the hell out of that one.
Well, Cindy, this is the last box. Supermates has now officially moved into Fire and Water podcast headquarters.
Where do you want this Starman short box?
Put it over by the classic monster DVDs. Be careful, don't crush my superpowers Batmobile.
Down, Christopher. Hey, you put the Star Trek DVDs on top of my comic action Wonder Woman invisible plane!
Oh! Jeez! Well, now we can tell everyone that Supermates can be found exclusively at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Now, if they subscribe via iTunes, they shouldn't notice a change, right?
Right. Or if they listen through the main Fire and Water Network feed, no change. They can just find the show's home, show notes, etc. here at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Well, I'm going to go take a dip in the Aquaman-sized swimming pool Rob has, but I am not putting on that mirror costume. It smells fishy.
Oh, come on. It'll be fun. Hey, don't trip over that life-size shag standee.
Thing is disturbingly real.
Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast, now a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Find us on iTunes or at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
It's time for the Mailbag of Doom, and last episode we asked everybody, who's your favorite character with a fin or fins? And we heard from Jared Driscoll on Facebook, and he said, Adam Strange, hands down the best DC Comics character ever. So Adam Strange, for those of you don't know, he's the 1950s space man who wears a jetpack and has a fin on his head and a sort of really cool red and white outfit. And he is a classic-looking character.
I think the best DC character ever. Bit of a big call.
Well, he's picking up that phone and dialing it, great big phone.
Points to him for making the bold choice and making the clone. That's just his opinion, man. Nikki at 100_beast said, Finn from The Force Awakens. Has Finn for a name? I tried. Actually, you know what? No, my pick is the entire cast of Street Sharks.
Oh, I remember Street Sharks.
Do you? I can vaguely recall them as kind of like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but sharks.
Pretty much. It was the whole toy line with a cartoon sort of ad.
30-minute ad.
Yeah.
Right.
Nicholas, who's Nick RDE on Twitter, said Jake the Dog from
Adventure Time.
Adventure, because he has a friend called Finn.
Finn the Human.
That's a pun.
That's such a good pun. Well done, Nick. Well done.
Well done.
Relatively Geeky at relatively_geeky said, funny answer is Dolphin. Right. True answer is, of course, Adam Strange.
Dolphin from Aquaman and Adam Strange from DC Comics.
Right.
That was Professor Allen's contribution.
Yes.
We heard from Andy Macken, who's Andy Indy K, and he said, does Adam Strange count with the rather swanky fin on his helmet? Well, apparently it does, given everyone else is saying that.
Yep. Including Martin Gray, who said the one and only Adam Strange is his favourite character with a fin. Lots of Adam Strange.
Yeah. He included a picture of Adam Strange from Invasion, which was drawn by Todd McFarlane.
Oh, nice. He's got quite the big fin on his. It's a very retro-looking design on him, yeah.
Zooming.
Yes.
Dr. And70, he chimed in and said, there is only one answer, the piranha. Apparently there isn't only one answer. And that's a Submariner villain, it looks like.
Now, is it Submariner or Submarina?
Submariner is the correct thing to say.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there two E's in the middle of it?
No, but I'm sure I've heard it pronounced the other way.
Yeah, well, that's the wrong way.
Is it? Okay. Oh, look, we had a response from Nick in Dallas, who is at Nick in Dallas, and he provided the answer of Kacharo. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It appears to be some sort of shark-type dude fighting Infinity Incorporated.
Yeah, Kacharo had some good albums.
Right.
We heard from Frack at Fractures, and he said Tiger Shark. No, Namor. No, Yondu. No, Fin Fang Foom. Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, the giant monster Fin Fang Foom has sort of fins outside of his head.
Yes.
Have you seen that comic where Fin Fang Foom tries to put one of the heroes in his underpants?
Yep. Yep. Unfortunately, I have.
Next wave. Love Next Wave.
Doug Zavisha at D Zavisha said Tiger Shark.
Oh, we heard from Keith G. Baker. Tiger Shark's cool. Keith G. Baker at KG Bunk, and he said Golden Age Atom, second costume, of course, which is the little guy with the blue cape, and he's got a fin on his head, a red fin, little yellow tunic with a atom burst on the middle.
Oh, look, it's a response from Aaron Long at Juice005, one of the head honchos at comicosity.com, and he said, oh, easy answer, Doom Patrol.
Okay, thank you.
I can't think of anyone in the patrol ever had a fin.
No. Closest is Karma had a mohawk.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's who Aaron meant.
Yeah. Anyway, we heard from Between the Pages, BTP blog on Twitter, and they said, that's a hard question. I'm torn between The Little Mermaid, Dory, and Don Knotts' Mr. Limpet.
Oh, yeah, there's a deep cut.
Good thinking outside the box there.
Mm. All right, Paul, what about you? What's your favourite character with a fin?
I'm going to join the pack and go with Adam Strange. I love Adam Strange. Not my favourite DC character, but probably my top five.
Wow. Okay.
But it's just such a beautiful retro concept. You know, the man plucked from Earth and sent to an alien planet where he becomes the champion of the planet, except with rocket packs. So it's a complete rip off of so many things, from Flash Gordon to John Carter. But you know, it's DC's and they've been doing it for, you know, decades. And it's cool. It's cool. And you got the whole ill-fated, you know, lovers thing where he's in love with Alana on the planet, but every now and again he gets zapped back to Earth unexpectedly by this beam. And so they can never be together. Just they keep being torn apart. But then they get back together, but they keep getting torn apart, etc. It's like a bread roll.
What bread roll do you tear apart and then put back together?
Oh. I didn't have many toys as a child.
So you made Transformers out of bread rolls, did you?
Yeastimus Prime.
Right. As for me, I couldn't actually think of one. What? My answer was almost going to be I do not have a favorite character with a fin. But Frack actually reminded me of one, and that's Yondu from the Guardians of the Galaxy comic. But I'm talking the 80s version of the team, when Yondu was actually a team member and he wasn't some redneck frickin' hillbilly Michael Rooker missing the fin Yondu. He was actually like this big badass warrior, and he had a giant red fin that went from, yeah, the top of his head all the way down his back. He was cool. He was kick-ass. That's my favorite version of the Guardians, which, I haven't read in ages, but they're the ones I enjoy the most. So, yeah, also Yondu. He was cool. He was just awesome. And he had a giant fin. So there we go. That's a half-hearted answer and a last-minute answer, but that was a tough question, damn it.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, so we're getting a bit silly. Let's sign off there for now. What are we going to ask the listeners for the next question of the week, Paul?
Okay, we're going to ask them, who are your favourite fictional foursome? The Beatles.
Some group that, what are they called? Doom Squad or something, or Patrol of something. I'll figure something.
Save it for next week. And we're also going to be looking at Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue 53, and we will have a special guest on the show.
Ooh.
Ooh, spoilers. Anyway, so if you want to respond to the question of the week, which is who's your favourite fictional foursome, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can get on Facebook and leave your answer there. And you've also got the added bonus of Doug's blog, which allows you to do longer posts. So Doug will put up pictures from this episode, which show you all the great things that we talked about. And then you can get in the messages after that and leave your response. And that's at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Anyway, thanks for joining us, Mike.
Yes, thanks for joining us, Paul, and thanks for joining us, listeners. We'll sign off for now, and we'll catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Bye.